Welcome to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. I'm John Cook, and I'm joined by George Goncalves, MUFG's head of U.S. macro strategy. It's Tuesday, November 2nd, 2021. Welcome back to the podcast, George.
Great to be on as always, John.
Always good to have you. So George, we are all getting ready for the upcoming November FOMC meeting and what will likely be one of the most important changes in monetary policy in recent history, the launch of the highly anticipated taper. But before we get there, why don't you provide some background on this round of QE and taper versus what the experience, what the markets experienced back in 2013 and 2014?
John, I mean, I think like most, I think we're consensus now in the sense that we think taper is going to happen at this upcoming meeting. If you recall, and for those that have been following our work, in my initial launch piece that I did back in April, May, when I joined the firm, which I laid out a path for higher short-term rates, and there was a risk that tapering up would get pulled forward into 21 from 22, which was back then a little bit of definitely out of consensus. And now here we are on the eve of the Fed potentially, most likely in our view, tapering. But I think it's important to kind of juxtapose and think through all these different QEs that we've gone through, what they've done. And, and one of the reasons why the Fed took longer than even what I thought they should have been tapering a long time ago. But what really led to this drawn out process of, talking about tapering, getting us prepared for it, and then hashing it all out, when in essence, it's really just a reduction in liquidity. They're still going to be providing liquidity on a monthly basis until they're finished. And so it's still like not as if it's a cold turkey stopping the QE process in one full swoop. It's going to be a process. And we could discuss the process and how it's going to work out, or those that are subscribers and get our content through email could look at the FOMC preview. But the bottom line, the difference really is that A, the magnitudes were smaller back in 2013, 2014. The actual size of QE was about $85 billion per month of 40 mortgages and 45 treasuries, which allowed for the Fed back then to reduce the pace of each QE operation per month by $5 billion each, so $5 billion less in mortgages, $5 billion less in treasuries. But they decided back then to do it at the meetings, where each meeting they would deliberate: are they going to reduce the pace of QE? They didn't want to give the signal that it was on a preset course, but in fact, it ended up being every time they met, they would reduce it by 10, 5, and 5, and they started it in the beginning of 2014 and ended it October of 2014, but basically dragged it out for the whole year. And what we're hearing, what we saw, at least some comments about this time around should be different, partly because there is now more of an imminent threat, potentially that inflation is stickier or not as transitory as initially thought. So they're gonna have to go faster, number one. Number two, they're buying $120 billion, so it's not 85. So they're starting from a much higher level. So they're going to have to go faster to get down to zero. And so I think the base case has kind of coalesced around the $10 billion reduction in treasuries, the $5 billion reduction in mortgages. What the real unknown, I think, at this point is, will they go back to the 13-14 process of deliberating at each meeting and having to vote on it? Or do they just assume that it's going to be shrinking every month so they don't have to have this gap, because the Fed meets every 6 weeks, and so it's not a perfect monthly cycle, and that would elongate the tapering to kind of speed up the process and get it done before the end of Q2 of next year, in case if they do want to hike, they would have to do a monthly style operation reduction, and that would be communicated through the New York Fed's open market operation schedules that gets released every month in the middle of the month. And I think, given that they want to make this as agnostic as possible and view this as a mechanical process, why do they have to vote on it when they know they're going to go to zero, or that's the intent? Because what's different now is we have potentially an inflation problem on our hands. So I think that's important to have out there, because I think it gets lost upon people. And it's been a long time since we went through the 13-14 actual taper process, not just the taper tantrum that the markets went through, but the actual mechanics of it. So I wanted to share that.
Yeah, no, that's super helpful. I mean, it feels like forever ago, and I perfectly honestly had forgotten a decent amount of what you just outlined. So let's move on to what you specifically expect from the Fed at the November FOMC meeting. And as a reminder for our listeners, we are recording this podcast on Tuesday, November 2nd, which is one day before the statement and post-meeting press before the statement is released and the post-meeting press conference is held. So, you know, you talked a little bit about it, George, in the previous answer, but let's get a little bit more specific here.
Yeah, so the key difference being that this is November, not a quarterly meeting where they give us the economic forecasts, the dots, and just, you know, provide more color on what they're thinking about the outlook in actual numeric form. But still, it's an important meeting. All meetings are live, as Chair Powell, when they moved towards press conferences at every meeting, this is a live meeting and most likely the meeting where they taper. So we're still going to get the statement, and we're going to get the prepared remarks as well as the Q&A in the press conference with Chair Powell. In the statement, they're going to have to reword the transitory aspect of inflation in a way where, you know, still suggests that they think it's going to resolve itself over time, but without really choosing that wording that this is a temporary phenomenon. Also in the statement, they're going to, if they are tapering, which we think, again, they are, they're going to have to outline, why they're tapering and how exactly they're going to do it. And maybe there'll be another separate document that'll be released from the New York Fed giving the specific mechanics of it. But I think, it's really going to be the time to discuss that QE has run its course. And again, in my view, it's well beyond running its course. But in the Fed's eyes, they're going to have to like say, hey, this is why we're tapering. And they should be speaking about it from a position of strength that they've achieved their mandates and their goals. And that's what to expect there. And then once, we kind of have a time to digest that, we'll hear from Chair Powell in the prepared remarks. And I'll be looking out for a number of things, both, in the Q&A, if there's certain questions that come out, but in his prepared remarks, just, this is an opportunity for them to champion the idea that they are tapering. They talked about it, now they're delivering it, and really get behind the messaging that this is a sign of progress, and that all of their policies have kind of worked to the best of their abilities to get us through the pandemic, and that they're really looking forward for the cycle to continue to grow, and that they're going to be here in a supportive fashion. And so I think like a positive message on that, but also try to be, not to be too dovish by saying this also prepares them to hike if necessary. But their view is that, the tapering and tightening are separate phenomenons. If they can somehow tie in that tapering is the start of a tightening process without actually locking themselves into a hiking cycle, that could be the way that they can sound hawkish and shift the onus back that, hey, they're going to be giving us less liquidity, something that the markets have now, there's been a number of, memes and narratives that have gone through the markets post-COVID about the Fed's just nonstop, printing money. And this is an opportunity to say, hey, we're stopping the liquidity, and, it should, result in some tightening of financial conditions somewhere over time as they taper. So if they can get around that message in a way that makes sense and isn't disruptive, and then if I'll be watching for the press corps asking questions around, what is the difference between tapering and tightening? And that could be an opportunity for Chair Powell to further emphasize that point. I'd be looking for questions around, will someone ask, there's been other central banks around the world, as well as, some papers written here in the States about, why not use the balance sheet as tightening before you start hiking? So maybe because we over-liquefied the system, we put too much liquidity into the system, perhaps we should shrink the balance sheet a little bit before hiking. So that would be, if that question were to come up, and if Chair Powell were to say, hey, we're maybe thinking about that, that would be a way to push back hikes further and use the balance sheet channel as a form of policy. So I think that's how, if I were to kind of work through how I would see things work to the best possible outcomes. And I think that would be how I would script it.
Yeah, well, you know, I thought the Fed and Chair Powell did a pretty good job of sort of threading the needle at the last FOMC meeting, where they effectively sort of pre-announced taper. So perhaps they'll be successful two meetings in a row. I guess the obvious next question is, if things play out as you expect, what does that mean for the market? I'd argue, and I don't think a lot of people would disagree, that the market is pricing in a lot already. So curious your thoughts there. And I'm also curious what your near-term outlook for the broader bond market is post-FOMC.
Sure. And look, you know, I think the setup is very important, as you state. And I am definitely of the view that we priced in way too much. And now we're starting to see some of that come off, but we definitely priced in a lot of hikes. And it's really come as a result of what's been happening outside of the U.S., not just in the U.S. And so the big changes that have taken place at the Bank of Canada and what the RBA has recently communicated, and how those bond markets potentially overreacted to these changes of policies in their own jurisdictions, led to kind of a correlation effect into U.S. rates, positioning, squaring ahead of the Fed, but also with that taking place in the backdrop probably exacerbated the moves that we saw, especially heading into month end last week. And so I think that was an overshoot, in my opinion. And it's good to see that the markets are starting to calm down and ahead of the Fed. I think if we get the Fed outcome that I'm envisioning, which is a neutral to slightly hawkish, but more hawkish on term premium, and that the balance sheet there's way too much liquidity in the system, and they're going to address that through their tools. If they shift the narrative towards that and away from hikes, the curve should steepen on average, and we should stop seeing this reach for duration or rally into the 10-year. And so hopefully, I think 10s should start to find resistance around 150 level. And the front end will be better supported, because the Fed's not going to, there's no imminent hikes coming. There's just starting tapering, for goodness sakes. So I think that, the front end will find support. It's a good carry place in the short run, until we get clarity on when the Fed's actually going to hike. And then we'll see a minor steepening. We have the refunding auctions that will take place after. And this Fed meeting also coincides with the whole other topic, which we can spend another podcast on, which is the changing of Treasury supply. But it's still too early to say how that's going to be priced in, considering we don't have the debt ceiling resolved and there's all these other unknowns. So I think, the typical refunding auction setup, rates back up into the middle of November, the Fed's out of the way, they're doing tapering, it's actually now official, and we get a little bit of a steepening of the curve. So I think that's the way I think it is for the near term. But beyond that, I'm starting to prepare and get mentally ready for 2022. And I think a lot of the price action will probably get pulled forward into middle of November, and we'll have some pricing adjustments once we get clarity on the debt ceiling in December. But I think, the year is really coming to a close, and trades are going to probably all get compressed into the middle of November.
Yeah, I mean, a lot going on, tomorrow, more broadly. And as you said, we're sort of running out of real estate, for the end of the trading year. And I guess, I'll use this as an opportunity to encourage our listeners to check out George's FOMC preview. And if you aren't getting George's strategy reports directly, please reach out to your MUFG sales coverage, get in contact with George or me directly, email Bloomberg, however it's convenient for you. And George, great stuff as always. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, John.
And thank you for listening to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. Rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and reach out to your MUFG sales rep for any further information. Check back soon for more insights from the Global Markets Research Team.